This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both wholeheartedly welcome you to the 75th episode of The New World Next Week, of course, our weekly video series that aims to cover some of the most important developments in alternative news and open source intelligence. And of course, you can find it all at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, so much to get into this week, and we'll get right to it with a story originally from Autopia, which is an automotive blog on the Wired website. Coming soon, automotive black boxes for every vehicle. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration will later this year propose a requirement that all new vehicles contain an event data recorder, known more commonly as a black box. The device, similar to those found in aircraft, records vehicle inputs and, in the event of a crash, provides a snapshot of the final moments before impact. That snapshot could be viewed by law enforcement, insurance companies, and automakers. The device cannot be turned off, and you'll probably know little more about it than the legal disclosure you'll find in the owner's manual. The proposal looks to some like a gross overreach of government authority, or perhaps effort by Uncle Sam, the insurance industry, and even the automakers to keep tabs on what drivers are doing. But if you're driving a car with airbags, chances are there's already one of these devices under your hood. Automakers have long installed electronic data recorders in their automobiles, and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has since late 2006 required automakers to tell consumers about the devices. That federal rule also outlines what information is recorded and stipulates that it be used to increase vehicle safety. Now, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is considering a proposal that would expand the availability and future utility of EDR data. In other words, a possible requirement that all automobiles have the devices. The proposal is expected sometime this year. A separate discussion would outline exactly what data would be collected. Both proposals follow rules adopted in 2006, and how they affect you depends on where you live and what data points it records. How much it will affect you in the future may depend on a new set of standards that spell out exactly what data is collected and who can access it. We do have an update and a flashback for you. In a related update, car seat monitors driver's heart activity, and a flashback on MediaMonarchy.com all the way to November 2006, Mothers Against Drunk Driving wants alcohol sensors in cars. Now, James, right before I throw it back to you, as I was getting my notes together for this episode, I realized that this story has been updated since I originally posted it from Wired magazine. They've updated it, and they softened the language, and the date has now been pushed back to this year that you heard me mention, and not the next month that was originally reported. James?
Interesting. Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, how surprising do you think this story is?
0.5.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. I mean, it's interesting. Every single step of the path that leads along into the technological tyranny is well laid out in advance, and we have all the infrastructure and everything laid out, and they announce it in these types of stories that people read in Wired or whatever, and a certain segment of the society will know about it, and then eventually it'll become standardized, and then one day they'll spring it on you and say, oh, by the way, we're tracking everything you're doing in your car now. And to me, it's just another step along a road that we've been on for a long time, and we're just continuing stepping in that direction, or they want us to continue stepping in that direction. And unfortunately, it's the totalitarian tiptoe. It's the incremental putting in of this each new layer of the technological control grid. So again, when we are aware of what's happening and we understand it and we still go along with it, that must say something about us rather than something about them, I guess.
It does, unfortunately. And they always use this sort of human interest angle of, well, you would want to know more information if you were in a car wreck or selling, you know, microchipping or RFID for the, you know, you would want your Alzheimer's grandmother to, you know, not to get lost. It's sold and couched in these terms of, well, how could you disagree with that?
But of course, you're not for lost Alzheimer's grandmothers, are you?
Exactly. And so then that is the open door for then everything else. So connected right along with this, James, we'll move to our second story that I have posted to cyberspacewar.com. DHS to gain autonomy under Obama cybersecurity plan, or DHS merges with DOD NSA under Obama's cyber threat plan. This story from Kurt Nimmo. Obama has proposed legislation that will give the Department of Homeland Security more autonomy in its effort to protect civilian computer networks from ostensible cyber attack, This according to InformationWeek.com. White House officials testified this past Monday before the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs about the comprehensive plan presented by the administration 2 weeks ago to create legislation to protect critical infrastructure and networks. It will merge operations with the Pentagon. One key aspect of the plan is to put the DHS's mission to protect the U.S. federal civilian networks on par with the DoD's mission to protect U.S. military networks, giving the DHS more autonomy to act against cyber threats on behalf of the government than before, so writes Elizabeth Montalbano for the technology publication Information Week. DHS has also sought to merge the effort with the NSA and various civilian operations. Last October, the Obama administration adopted new procedures for using the Defense Department's vast array of cyber warfare capabilities in case of an attack on vital computer networks inside the U.S., delicately navigating historic rules that restrict military action on American soil, according to the New York Times. Furthermore, according to the Times, a team of military networking experts would be assigned to the Operations Center at the Homeland Security Department. The new approach will begin with the Department of Homeland Security team deploying to Fort Meade, Maryland, home to both the National Security Agency, which specializes in electronic espionage, and the military's new Cyber Command. At the time, government officials said the new rules contain a rapid response to a cyber threat while balancing concerns that civil liberties might be at risk should the military take over such domestic operations. In other words, the government announced effort to protect against the hyped threat of cyber terrorism would require a sacrifice of liberty. The DHS plan announced on Monday will give the DHS, recognizing our similar role to DoD with regard to federal civilian networks, similar authority with regard to personnel so we can bring them on board rapidly, so says Philip R. Redinger of the New School, Deputy Undersecretary for the DHS National Protection and Programs Directorate, and he told Congress. The plan also gives DHS much clearer authority and responsibility to work in a voluntary way with the private sector, something it has already been doing. In 2009, Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman sidestepped answering if the Pentagon cybercom would be capable of offensive operations as well as protecting the DoD. This command is going to focus on the protection and operation of DoD's networks. This command is going to do what is necessary to do that. In 2006, a Pentagon document entitled The Information Operations Roadmap was released to the public after a Freedom of Information request by the National Security Archive at George Washington University. It states that the Pentagon has developed a, quote, robust offensive suite of capabilities to include full-range electronic and computer network attack. We must fight the net, end quote. James, two related updates. NSA collects as much data as is stored in the entire Library of Congress every 6 hours, and the NSA whistleblower Thomas Drake, who is on trial, talked to 60 Minutes the other night about the Espionage Act, 9/11, and very much more. James.
Interesting. So we've got the Pentagon is going to fight the net as if it's an enemy weapon system. We've got Cybercom. We have the NSA. We now have DHS becoming more autonomous in its fight against the evil internet. And the whole thing was created by DARPA. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of military, federal, overarching control over internet. I'm beginning to think there is. What do you think?
I wonder. And we note on so many levels that so many innovations come from or were made for the military, and they're slowly doled out to the public over years and decades and generations. But essentially, yeah, you could say, well, they gave it to us so they can take it away. And even folks like the questionable Julian Assange says that, you know, the internet is a worldwide wiretap. So does John Young of crypto.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I do suggest people go back and listen to some interviews with John Young, because I think he's right on about this. He says basically anyone who thinks that anything that they do on the internet is in any way anonymous or private is fooling themselves, because there's nothing you can do on the internet that can't be read or can't be searched or somehow seen by governmental agencies. And he's probably right. I mean, there's not much unless you're an elite level hacker. Maybe there's something you can do, but even then it seems less and less likely. And the point of that isn't to scare everyone into submission. The point of that is to say, look, I mean, you got to get out there and just spread the truth. There's nothing wrong with doing that. There's nothing wrong with standing up and saying the truth. So So rather than using this as a point to cower and be scared of the authorities, it's a point to stand up against them.
And I'll be the first to admit that the barrage of, you know, cybercom and cybersecurity legislation and proposals, I follow these stories a bit, and I find it difficult to follow fully where these things are going. And I'm sure that's, again, all kind of part of the plan, that it's just this big, foggy, fuzzy thing, and you just kind of go along and accept, oh, okay, well, people smarter than me are in control, and they're going to take care of me, right?
Yeah, that's generally the way it goes. And you're right, it is very difficult to keep up to date with all of these different proposals. So, and then that's one of the things they use against us. They throw, you know, 100 pitches at us at one time, and we can't bat all of them. So it's always a question of just trying to stay one step ahead, and it's very difficult to do.
And I'll quickly note on a positive note that, you know, yes, this is an information war, and we're going to use these tools to the best of our ability while we can. I should have mentioned that first story about the automotive black boxes came to me from a friend, a personal friend of mine, who has always been one to say, oh, you think, you know, they blew up the World Trade Center, or, you know, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. But you now have, and I bet a lot of other folks who maybe follow this kind of information in alternative news, find more people who have poo-pooed things in the past coming to you going, oh my God, did you see this story? So, James, let's actually now quickly move to our third story. And I have this posted on foodworldorder.com. Global food inflation hits hemp seed, coconut oil, and other superfoods. This from naturalnews.com. Food inflation is hitting the superfood industry right where it hurts, in the wallet, thanks to several factors. You can read more about on naturalnews.com. Prices on hemp seeds, hemp oils, coconut oil, and other superfoods are set to skyrocket beginning in just a few days. One of the largest superfood suppliers in the U.S., Nutiva, has announced an 11% price increase coming May 27th. Then that may just be the beginning of an accelerating trend in steady increases. Impacting hemp seeds and hemp oil, the price of crude oil, up 30% or more over the last few months, adds to the cost of transporting these foods. Remember, thanks to the completely idiotic and utterly anti-American stance of the DEA, Obama, and most of the Congress, it's illegal to grow hemp seeds in America, meaning all hemp seeds sold as nutritional foods in the U.S. must be imported from other countries. This policy is not only destroying opportunities for U.S. farmers, it also results in the wasteful expenditure of fossil fuels to transport hemp products to the USA from other countries. Another factor sharply increasing the cost of imported hemp products is the plummeting value of the U.S. dollar versus the Canadian dollar. Surprise, surprise, James. So as the U.S. dollar loses its purchasing power and Canadian farmers are reaping the financial rewards, it's going to make the domestic cost here in the States of importing items increasingly expensive. So just as good superfoods like that are increasing in price, we have a related update. Smucker's-owned Folgers and Dunkin' Donuts brand coffees to cost also an 11% more increase on average. So even the good and the bad, it's all going up in price, but again, pinned to the fact that the dollar is worth less.
That's right. The more toilet paper they print, the less it's worth. And that's the ultimate result. It's just going to be more and more inflation. And I wish I had a happy related story to add to this, but I don't. I did have a listener send in a story yesterday via the contact form on CorbettReport.com. Very interesting. It seems Denmark is banning Marmite. And it seems like the Danish version of the FDA is doing this. And it looks like an implementation of Codex Alimentarius piecemeal in each country. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's all going to happen overnight, but each country is starting to ban certain things or to restrict certain goods because certain vitamin supplements and things can't be given anymore. And Marmite is somehow classed as some sort of vitamin supplement. And for people who don't know, that's just basically an Australian bread that you put on bread, and it's quite disgusting, I think, personally, but a lot of people out there like it. And it's just another sign that we're heading into some very dark times with some very, very overarching systems of control being slotted into place, like Codex Alimentarius.
James, just a couple other quick things. As the world seems to increasingly speed up, some of the other latest news I have: major tornado outbreak seen for the Midwest, judge rules Tucson shooting suspect Jared Loughner incompetent for trial, and could Rand Paul single-handedly cause the Patriot Act to collapse? The extension vote could come by this Friday. And we note there was another freshman senator who also used to oppose the Patriot Act, but he's now the president defying the War Powers Act. But that's another story, James. We got to get out of here.
All right. Thank you again for the great work.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Take care.